Welcome to Trust Me, the official podcast of the Trust and Estate Section of the California Lawyers Association. The Trust and Estate Section seeks to further the knowledge of practitioners through updates and a wide range of educational opportunities. In addition, the section monitors and participates in the formation of laws and regulations that impact the trust and estates field and represents section members in the governance of the California Lawyers Association. For further information about the Trust and Estate Section, please go to calawyers.org, click on Sections, Trusts and Estates to learn about upcoming educational opportunities and the benefits of section membership. And now, to your host of today's podcast.
Welcome to Trust Me, the podcast of the Trust and Estate Section of the California Lawyers Association. I'm Herb Stroh, and I'll be your host for this episode. Today, we discuss ethics with Tom Shaver and Neil Wortley. Gentlemen, welcome. Tom, tell us a little bit about yourself and your practice.
Good to be with you, Neil and Herb. I practiced for 17 years with Hartog, Bear & Hand in Orinda, California. My practice focused on estate planning and probate and trust administrations. And I am just completing a six-year term on the executive committee of the Trust and Estate Section of the California Lawyers Association. It's a mouthful, but it was a great opportunity.
Thanks, Tom. Neil, where do you practice? What's your background?
Hi, Herb. Thank you. And good to be with you and Tom as well. I have been a transactional lawyer for most of my career, most recently as a partner at Milbank here in Los Angeles. I retired from Milbank a few years ago, though, and have mostly been doing expert witness work. My involvement as a transactional lawyer at what I like to think of as a top-tier firm, in addition to my active involvement in the ethics bar over the last dozen or so years, and teaching as an adjunct faculty member at UCLA Law School and also UC Berkeley Law School and Santa Clara Law School, people have been finding me, hiring me as an expert in their litigated disputes, primarily either business-related disputes or disputes involving attorney ethics, which is exactly what brings us here together today.
Yeah, thanks, Neil. And I'll come back to you and we'll talk a little bit about the ethics committee and then some substantive ethical issues. But I want to come back to Tom. Tom, we invited you here today to the podcast to talk about recent release of the fourth edition of the Guide of the California Rules of Professional Conduct for Estate Planning, Trust, and Probate Counsel. What was your role in the guide?
I was the chair of the ethics subcommittee of the executive committee that I served on. So I was there for the entire two-year process that it took us to complete the fourth edition of the guide. I think this may be a unique publication. It is an ethics guide that is dedicated to one particular field of legal practice. All of the ethics issues that you run into as a estate planning, trust, and probate counsel, or even a probate litigator. The executive committee reviews its editions about every 7 years. They come back to the edition. And it's a two-year process. We spend 1 year looking at the current edition of the guide, looking for updates on case law, ethics opinions, current articles, updating all of the law and commentary on ethics rules. And then we spend a year rewriting chapters, editing, revising. And so this process started in September of 2018 and resulted in the publication of the guide just recently.
How many people did you have working on the guide with you?
Well, this was truly a work of the entire executive committee, almost. So there were 30 people who contributed from their practice. Neil, God bless you. You actually read through the entire guide yourself. We had a skilled practitioner who also reviewed this for style as part of this whole process.
I was going to say, what's new or different with the fourth edition? Where are the improvements, changes from the third edition?
Well, obviously, it was prompted by the change in the rules of professional conduct that the Supreme Court, California Supreme Court, enacted in November 2018. The court substantially expanded the number of ethical rules, so we substantially expanded the guide. And if you have been using the guide in the past, you'll find a lot of continuity. If you are used to looking up issues, some of the ethical issues do not change. Diligence, competence, identifying client, confidentiality, communication, conflicts of interest, all of that is still there. I guess what has changed now, we have renewed the practice focus of the guide. This is a practice guide. It is meant to get the estate and trust and estates practitioner to the relevant source materials, look at a particular issue and get you to those issues. But we have case studies that are meant for topics for discussion in your firm or with colleagues. We've got a lot of different sample letters. So we're increasing the practice component of the guide, enhancing that. There are three new chapters that we have not had in prior editions of the guide. There is a chapter on terminology. Rule of Professional Conduct 1.0.1 substantially expanded the number of defined terms that are used in the rules of professional conduct. So we have a specific chapter as to where those particular defined terms are used in the rules. We added a chapter specifically on litigation. Haven't had a dedicated chapter to litigation before. It generated a lot of conversation among the committee.
Of course, a bunch of litigators. They got to disagree on something, right?
But there are specific issues that probate litigators face. I drafted the trust. Why shouldn't I represent the trust, the successor trustee as the administrator after the death of the settlor? What could possibly go wrong? And we have an expanded chapter on technology. A very interesting chapter to write. What we did was we went through all of the ethical issues that were in the previous chapters. And for each of those issues, what is the technological threshold of those ethical issues? So, confidentiality, having a laptop in an airport, or blogging. Is that advertising? You tell me that that's advertising? Well, I didn't. Well, okay. But the ethical issues related to technology are expanding. They are even expanding further in this time of public health restrictions. And I know the Ethics Committee on the California Lawyers Association has done some very good work on the issues that you face from the remote office. So we tried to reach all of that as well.
It looks like there was more of the ACTEC materials. I know the prior guide had ACTEC materials in as well, but did you use more of some of the ACTEC commentary in this edition?
They became more relevant because when we now conform to the model rules, the ACTEC materials had even greater relevance and are more pertinent to the ethical issues we face. They are particularly useful because they have some practical examples. And again, it's the practice focus of this guide. So you can walk through a kind of commentary by ACTEC and generate some discussion about where does the ethical issue arise? How do you address it? How do you keep a case from going sideways? And we also, ACTEC graciously gave permission to incorporate some of their sample letters to the guide as well.
I was going to say, just kind of going through it, I've got my copy, and it is a significant expansion from the third edition. And I really like the use of the ACTEC materials and the case studies were, I find really helpful in exposing some of the issues and giving greater breadth to what we already had there. Tell me, if someone's interested in purchasing it, how would they get a copy?
Very simple. Thank you, California Lawyers Association, for making this seamless. Go to the California Lawyers Association website. Go to the Trust and Estates section. It's right there in bright neon, a lovely compass on the cover. They have a link, And if you follow the link down, they have sub links, if you will, to Amazon, to other platforms. You can purchase the hard copy. You can purchase an electronic copy. You don't have to wait. You can get your electronic copy by download almost instantly. So we're very grateful for the assistance of the California Lawyers Association in making the guide very accessible.
Thanks, Tom. Neil, let me turn to you. Tell me a little bit about CLA Ethics Committee. I know you chair that committee. What's the committee about and what's it do?
Sure. So the Board of Representatives of the CLA, I think around the beginning of last year, began to think about the need and the benefit of having an ethics committee within the CLA. And I was one of two people who were tapped to think about that and plan out what an ethics committee within the CLA might look like. I think in part I was asked to do this because I'm a former chair of the ethics committee of the state bar and also a former chair of the business law section. And we made a presentation to the Board of Representatives last summer where they approved the formation of the Ethics Committee. Our very first meeting was at the annual meeting last year when we were meeting in person. That was the one in Monterey. And at that point in time, our first year was we had 12 members. We've now expanded to 16 members. And our focus is on serving the members of the CLA in creating educational content, commenting on proposed changes to the rules of professional conduct, writing advisory opinions on important and practical issues that touch on attorney ethics, and preparing ethics alerts and reminders of ethical compliance issues to members within the CLA. Since our first meeting, a little more than a year ago, we have put on over 20 MCLE programs. We've published over 20 articles within the CLA on attorney ethics. We've commented on approximately 10 state bar proposals to make changes or to issue advisory opinions. And I'm proud to say we have submitted to the Board of Representatives for, hopefully for approval, our first advisory opinion. This particular one is on the requirements for creating an ethical screen that actually works in the case of conflicts of interest. That's quite a bit of activity for what started off as 12 members and only recently expanded to 16, but it's kind of a handpicked group. I'm the co-chair. Dave Myshak is the other co-chair. But of our 16 members, 11 of us are former members of the State Bar's Ethics Committee, and 6 of us are former chairs of the State Bar's Ethics Committee. We also have 2 members who were advisors or members of the most recent Rules Revision Commission. This is the State Bar Commission that studied and wrote and submitted for approval the changes to the rules of professional conduct that Tom was talking about just a few minutes ago. So that's who we are. We're here to support the members of the California Lawyers Association with respect to ethical matters in terms of making sure they understand their compliance issues.
Well, I can tell you as a member of the Board of Reps for CLA, we do really appreciate the work that you've done, and it is top notch. It's a pleasure to read some of the opinions and the comments that your group has been able to put together.
Thank you.
Now, before our podcast, I asked you to highlight ethical issue that would be of particular importance to trust in the state attorneys. So what do you have for us today?
I think one of the most interesting issues, and by the way, Tom is right. I actually did read the entire guide as part of my effort to act as a helpful editor. Perhaps that's more telling about what an ethics nerd I am than anything else. But the guide I found to be incredibly well written and very, very helpful from a practical perspective. So I think it would be of tremendous use to practitioners in the area. One of the areas that I thought was particularly helpful and also interesting, there were some aspects of this that were quite interesting to me, given my background in attorney issues and ethics. related to conflicts of interest, and specifically the issue of who is and who is not your client. And there are a number of ethical issues that flow from that. And I think that the guide does a really good job of helping practitioners figure out who they represent, the importance of identifying who is the client, who is not the client, and if there are multiple clients, identifying whether there are conflicts and how to deal with conflicts, and including sample language for conflict waivers. So it's just a tremendous resource in that respect.
What are some of the specific issues in dealing with, particularly, I'm sure all of us have this issue, representing a fiduciary who's also a beneficiary. What are some of the issues that a practitioner should be particularly sensitive to in that kind of a situation?
So when you're representing a fiduciary, there are a couple of issues that flow out of that. One is that, generally speaking, the attorney is representing the office or the position of the fiduciary and not necessarily the individual who's serving in that capacity. Issues about confidentiality and attorney-client privilege. If you have a client who is, you know, essentially acting as the fiduciary, it's important that you advise them and they recognize that if and when they leave that position and somebody succeeds them, they have access to all of the confidential communications, and it's their right and power to waive the attorney-client privilege. So it's very important that a fiduciary understand what their role is and the attorney properly advise them. But if they're also acting as a beneficiary, the fiduciary himself or herself has their own conflict of interest, and they should be properly advised by counsel that they need to act accordingly. And they may need to or desire to have separate counsel representing them in their individual capacity, not in their representative capacity as a fiduciary, because their interests are conflicted and they could be replaced as a trustee, for example, in which event all of the communications with the counsel that they've used in their capacity as trustee become available to a successor.
When you're in a situation like that, if the client pays you individually, so in other words, you're representing the client in a fiduciary capacity and giving them advice into that, if it comes into issues regarding the individual beneficiary side, if a separate file is set up, they pay personally for that, is that enough to handle that conflict, or are there situations where they should just get a separate attorney and keep it completely independent?
Well, they're still conflicted if they're paying for fees from separate pockets, if you will. To the extent they're being advised on an individual basis, they're paying for that out of their own funds. They've eliminated the fee conflict issue, but they're still conflicted because they're potentially both a beneficiary and a trustee, and they have to act accordingly. As a fiduciary, it's your obligation to put the beneficiaries ahead of your interests as the fiduciary. And if you're acting in your own self-interest as a beneficiary, perhaps to the detriment of other beneficiaries, you may be in breach of your fiduciary duties. So it goes beyond just the source of payment, and it becomes an important issue for fiduciaries, and they should be properly advised accordingly.
And the attorney, what steps should the attorney take to make sure that if he's representing the fiduciary, that the other beneficiaries don't see them as, quote, the trust attorney, the estate attorney, to avoid a sense where a beneficiary thinks they're representing my interests?
Yeah, so I think that's the key question. And the guide actually does a really good job of analyzing this. This is the importance of being able to identify who is and who is not your client. And it is often necessary for the attorney to the fiduciary to make clear to the beneficiaries that the attorney is not working for their benefit, that the attorney is not, as a result of working for the trust, if you will, or for the fiduciary, that they haven't created an attorney-client relationship with the beneficiaries. And the beneficiaries may reasonably believe that the attorney is working for their benefit, or that they had that the attorney is acting as their attorney, and that just further compels the attorney to be expressly clear and hopefully in writing that they are not working for the benefit of the beneficiaries. They're not, they don't have an attorney-client relationship with the beneficiaries. And if the beneficiary, if any beneficiary has a legal issue they want to discuss, the best response for the attorney is, I'm not your counsel. You should engage your own counsel.
And I assume you want to try and get that in writing as many times as is necessary to make sure the Benny understands.
Absolutely.
Another situation, representing corporate fiduciaries, professional fiduciaries, it's not uncommon for an attorney to represent professional or a corporate fiduciary, and then perhaps in another matter, be on the other side, representing the beneficiary. Are there ways to make that ethically viable without getting the attorney in trouble?
Sure. I think what you're suggesting presumes there may be a conflict, a potential or an actual conflict.
Right.
And there are ways to deal with that. Our rules, and this is captured in our new rules, 1.7 for current clients and 1.9 for former clients. If there's a conflict where you have two clients on opposite sides of the table, or one current client and one former client on opposite sides of the table, and you're representing, you know, one against the other, that's a conflict, but with informed written consent, the attorney can proceed. There's some limits to that. For example, you can't, and this is built into the rules, but you can't represent a current client in litigation against another current client, for example. But with informed written consent, outside of those few areas where consent is precluded, if you make proper disclosures to the clients and get a signed waiver from them, you can proceed notwithstanding the conflict.
Okay, so I could get my representation of a corporate client and I ask them for a conflict waiver for future representation. That's within the rules.
What you're talking about, I think, is an advance waiver of future conflicts.
Right.
Those are sanctioned in the sense that they can work. The question ultimately becomes whether the client has provided informed written consent. And if you're asking for a blanket waiver for all future conflicts without really providing additional information, such as the type of conflict that might arise and why it might be problematic for that client, arguably you may not have provided the necessary disclosures in order for the client to provide informed written consent.
Thanks.
But at least in theory, and certainly the rule as well as case law supports the notion that an advance conflict waiver can work.
It would just have to be very carefully drafted, I assume.
Correct. That's the key issue.
Shifting gears, in the few minutes that we have left, can you touch on ethical issues that attorneys should be aware of in this unique time that we're practicing today during a pandemic? Does that raise some issues that you think are worth highlighting?
I do, and I think this is one that a number of us in the ethics community have done a lot of thinking about and writing about. There's some really good articles out there. In fact, I wrote an article for the publication of the business law section recently on some of the risks that you should be thinking about. But there are a number of different ways that this arises with the pandemic and stay-at-home orders where attorneys are working remotely. You're much more dependent on technology, which means you need to have a certain level of competence with respect to the use of technology. You can't unreasonably maintain the security of your systems and your access to documents online such that you may compromise the confidential information of your client. And despite working at home, you're still responsible for keeping in touch with clients, keeping in touch with mail or notices or summons that may be delivered to your office. So you should make arrangements to have, you know, those documents scanned and emailed to you, or that you periodically go to the office to check your mail, and that people be able to reach you, that you're accessible even if you're not at your office phone number. Either you may have that forwarded to you, or you make sure that your your key clients or perhaps opposing counsel, have your cell phone number, a working email address, all of those kinds of things to make sure that you're still functioning and protecting your client's interests, and most importantly, acting competently, notwithstanding the disruption that's caused to our everyday practices as a result of the pandemic.
Thanks, Neil. And I'll note that the fourth edition of the guide has about 28, 29 pages on ethics and technology, the new section that Tom referenced. That's all the time we have today. I really want to thank Tom and Neil for joining us. Appreciate your comments, both of you. Thanks.
My pleasure.
It's a pleasure.
Tom, if someone wants to reach you, how would they get a hold of you?
They can reach me through my email. It's available on the State Bar website.
Okay. And I'll also include that in the show notes for folks that wanted to get a question out to you. And Neil, how about you?
You can also find me through the State Bar Attorney Search page or find my contact information on my website, which is wertlieblaw.com. That's wertlieblaw.com.
Okay, thanks. In the show notes today, I'll place a link to help people find the new ethics guide. And as Tom mentioned, it's available both in hard copy and ebook. If you have any questions, feedback on the podcast, or suggestions for future guests or topics, you can feel free to reach me at herb.stroh@mccormickbarstow.com. Thanks for listening to Trust Me. And till next time, hang in there. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Trust Me is a production of the Trusts and Estates section of the California Lawyers Association and produced by Foley Mara Studios. For further information, please go to calawyers.org, click on Sections, Trusts and Estates, and look for the Education tab to learn about upcoming live programs, online CLE and webcasts, as well as a broad range of low-cost self-study programs. Many of our guests are contributors to the Trusts and Estates Quarterly, the official publication of the section. Benefits of membership include the quarterly, along with email case alerts and other opportunities to stay current in the Trusts and Estates field. Please consider subscribing to this podcast so that you don't miss our next episode. And thanks for listening to Trust Me.